Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Michael Pittman Jr. I always enjoy these little stories because, Seth, I feel like as a former player, you can tell me if this is as big a deal as it gets to be made out to be sometimes. Carson Wentz got traded to the Colts, as we know, last week. His jersey number has been number 11 since he was in college. Michael Pittman, who is a rookie wide receiver, says, not giving him number 11.
Yeah, so I spoke to him, and he was just seeing, like, how locked in I was to 11, and I told him that I was locked in. And he was like, that's cool, bro, because I'm probably going to switch anyway. So it went really well, and he's just a cool guy. I mean, like, he didn't try to press me or anything like that.
All right, so Carson Wentz is going to be changing numbers because Michael Pittman, ballsy move, by the way, for Pittman to keep a number that would belong to the guy who's supposed to give him targets this year.
Yeah, for how long? I mean, people acted like this was Joe Montana coming in and trying to keep his number or something. He's one of the worst quarterbacks in the league last year.
He's the quarterback.
Hasn't really been good for several years.
He's the leader of the team.
Michael Pittman's got to be thinking, like, yeah, sorry about it, bro. Like, you're a short term. My over under on number of games Carson Wentz starts this year is 9. So
is that based on performance or injury?
Based on performance from last year.
Okay.
Maybe Frank Reich's got him. I know that what the story is that Wentz, he lost his confidence because the offensive line wasn't good. And also, his feelings were sad. He was sad because they drafted Jalen Hurts, and he just couldn't handle that kind of pressure, Sean.
You know what? It's funny you bring that up because, yeah, Peter King had that in his Football Morning in America column. He had a big section on Carson Wentz, and he said in there, there were three issues with Wentz in Philadelphia. One, he was seeing ghosts because he didn't trust his O-line. I think that's somewhat justifiable. They were really banged up on the offensive line in Philadelphia. But yeah, the second bullet point was he didn't take to hard coaching. Yeah. And the use of a second-round pick, as you just mentioned, Seth, on Jalen Hurts, hurt his feelings. I wonder, boy, Frank Reich must have really been going to town on Chris Ballard to bring Carson Wentz in here, because this does not feel like a trade. This doesn't feel like a Ballard kind of thing. You know, like, Ballard has constructed a roster that's built around toughness and blue collar work ethic.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying Carson Wentz doesn't work hard, but he certainly does not seem to be mentally strong or psychologically strong.
It's an interesting dynamic in Philly when you also consider the fact that their Super Bowl, he helped get them to that Super Bowl, but he had nothing to do with the Super Bowl victory, obviously. So there's that. He's probably felt marginalized for reasons beyond his control at times. So maybe that's just being misphrased or misinterpreted by journalists and what have you. I don't want to run with that 100%, like that's exactly what happened. But yeah, there's not this feeling that it doesn't sound like he took the Jalen Hurts drafting as a challenge as much as an insult.
Right.
Whereas I heard actually Tannenbaum talking on, I think it was the Pro Football Focus podcast the other day, where he was talking about how, look, true stud quarterbacks, Yeah, they might look at it as a challenge, but it's not going to keep them up at night that you drafted a quarterback in the second round. Hey, Aaron Rodgers, it might have spurred him a little bit. Maybe it put a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, but it's not like he felt like his job was at risk because they drafted. Now, the Green Bay situation was a little different because they drafted somebody in the first round and they traded up to get him. That's drafting your replacement versus drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round. That's not quite your replacement.
Well, not only with Rodgers did they draft potentially his replacement in the first round, Seth, that just continued a trend where they never use top-level draft equity to find Aaron Rodgers' weapons. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to draft your replacement. It's another thing where you go 15 years without drafting a wide receiver on the first day of the draft.
Hey, the official name of the storm, by the way, is Uri. So it's Winter Storm Uri.
Oh, so it had a name.
It had an official name. Okay. I kind of like one of our listeners' suggestions. It should be called the Whore Easter. Instead of a nor'easter, a whore'easter. Yeah. The problem with that was it was coming from... Oh, and it was two storms. It was Uri and Viola, apparently.
Okay.
Gosh,
we're getting some good names on here. Did you see some of these?
The 2021 ERCOT Power Freeze.
That's a good one. I like call the storm Jack Easter Freeze.
That's funny right there. I laugh at that all the time.
Yeah, sure you do.
The Tailbone Breaker 2021.
That's what it was for me.
Snowvid. Yeah. Snowvid's a good one.
Snowvid is a good one. I like that one. Yeah. Snowvid. Snowvid 21. Yeah.
Yeah, the Tailbone Breaker. Were you worried at any point when you slipped that you did break your tailbone? That's a bad feeling.
No, I kind of landed. I was able to see, I watch a lot of wrestling, so I know how to fall. So I was able to land on the meat of my butt cheek as opposed to right on my tailbone. What do they call the tailbone? The coccyx, I think is what they call it.
Yeah, it's your coccyx.
Yeah. I did not fall on my coccyx. I fell on my gluteus maximi. So, yeah.
Yeah, as far as Ballard not liking that move, I think Ballard figured, okay, this is a second rounder, and Ballard is not going to hesitate one bit to pull Carson Wentz. If Carson Wentz isn't playing well, there's no way in hell he's going to play the 75% of the snaps he needs to trigger a first-round pick, second-round pick becoming a first-round pick for the Eagles. So I think he looked at it as probably an acceptable risk. And, look, different people are different in different situations, and maybe Carson Wentz under Frank Reich is a completely different dude. You want to believe that he's a tough guy, right? Wears camo all the time. He's from North Dakota.
Right.
He's either a tough guy or he's in a militia. It's one of those two things.
Here in the Dakotas, that's what you do. I think it's a good deal for the Colts. If I were the Colts, I would have done the deal. You needed a solution at quarterback. It's kind of a boom or bust thing, but I think it's worth the risk. Third round pick, and really it's a second round pick because, like you said, Seth, if it's not working, you pull the plug. You make sure that pick doesn't get upgraded from a 2 to a 1 in 2022. All right, a reminder here that if you do want to help out Kids Meals Houston, we've been doing good things here, you guys. And when I say we, not just the station, but all the stations up here, and particularly you, the listeners, have been doing great things, stepping up for Kids Meals Houston. You can text Kids Meals to 20357 and donate. As you heard earlier from Beth Braniff Harp, the CEO of Kids Meals Houston, you can volunteer by going to kidsmealsinc.org. You can do some DIY lunches for the kids. They feed thousands and thousands of kids every day who don't get the free lunches through the school systems. So it's really important. They lost all their food in the freeze when the power went out, so we're helping them get back on their feet. Text Kids Meals to 20357. Every little bit helps. What was the short season like for the Houston Astros? We'll hear from Alex Bregman, and also we'll hear from George Springer's replacement on how urgent that situation is. Some Astro talk next. All right, I'm checking in on the poll here. Yeah, Deshaun is still winning handily. Team Deshaun or Team Texans front office? Deshaun's still winning handily. We'll keep an eye on that. No big surprise there.
You say winning handily, what's that mean?
82% to 18% right now.
Okay.
People are still in Deshaun's corner. Alex Bregman met with the media yesterday. How was the short season last year, Alex?
Me personally, I feel like 60 games, it kind of made me feel like we hadn't been able to play this game for like 2 years now. I feel like we haven't really, like that 162 season, it just feels right. When you play 60 games, like looking back on it, I feel like we didn't even play last year. Like I feel like I just didn't really feel like we played. So being back and knowing that we're going to play 162 games, it's exciting to get to do what we love. And Like you said, I don't think anybody takes the game for granted, but when you're away from it, you don't get to play that full season. And I think a lot of us had a time to look back and reflect on not only last year, but our whole career, and really just be grateful for being able to play the game that we love, the game that we played since we were little kids. And helped us fall in love with the game all over again.
Seth, it really was, looking back now, it was a weird season. It was almost like not even a baseball season. It was more like a tournament. You know what I mean? Like 60 games is, in baseball, that's barely enough to determine anything. It's barely a third of a season. That's why, you know, you look, Altuve was awful. Like Altuve had an OPS of barely over 600. That's like a souped up pitcher. And I need to go do some research. I'm sure somebody's done this research already. But go find really bad 60-game stretches for guys who are elite hitters. I bet it happens way more often than we think. And that just, Altuve just happened to be one of those hitters. Correa as well. Bregman to a different degree that just fell. The 60 games that they have where they would normally, during a season, probably cool off a little bit, happened to end up being the entire 2020 season for them.
Yeah, no, they actually, this guy, Mike Petriello, I don't know, he did an article where he looked at six guys who 2020 was not nearly as bad as it looked because it was only 60 games. And if you incorporate Altuve's postseason into his regular season, usually you would say, like, all right, now you're just trying too hard to make it look like normal. But if you take his postseason and incorporate it and add it all together, in some respects, he was actually 12% better than average because he got it going in the postseason. And I think that's what – I think it's fair given last year because you didn't have any 162 games to look at.
Yeah.
So 2020 for Altuve and all those other guys on the team started off so miserable, but then they figured it out as the season went along and they squeaked their way into the playoffs and they made it to the damn ALCS. I think for the Astros more so than most teams, they probably felt like it was way too short a season because they could sense by the end of the year, okay, we still have it. We're still getting into our groove. Imagine if we had 162 games instead of just 60 to actually work our way through all these issues, find things out. You know, Bregman talked about opening up his swing and some of the things he was doing wrong last year. He had figured it out by the end of the regular season. It's just that he didn't have enough time to really spend all the time with it that he wouldn't normally.
Yeah, so fine-tune it, yeah.
Yeah, the Astros probably, I mean, I would bet the over on the Astros this year just because I think a lot of people thought that the slow start last year was more tied to the cheating scandal from 3 years prior than it actually was, and that they're going to be just fine this year.
Do you know what that number is for the Astros? I do. Do you know what the Astros season win total is in Vegas?
I had predicted it was going to be 91, and I think I was way off. Is it 88?
It's 87.5.
Okay.
I would take the over as well.
Yeah.
I would
especially,
take
the, I mean, the division they're in. It's
not good.
To put it, honestly, that's a little bit of an insult. Yeah, I would take the over. 87.5 in this division is basically saying the Astros are just a mediocre team.
Right.
So, yeah, I would take the over on that.
Yeah, I want to say they're like eighth or ninth on the list of all 30 teams win-wise. The Dodgers season win total is 103.5.
Yeah.
103.5, which, look, I know the Astros have gone over that total a couple times over the last few years, but for that to be the posted total in Vegas, 103.5, you rarely see teams crack 100. 103.5 for the Dodgers. Again, similar dynamic for the Dodgers. That division is really, really bad compared to the Dodgers. Miles Straw is one of the players in spring training that has a real opportunity here to establish himself, but he's also looking at possibly his last chance of becoming a regular on a major league roster. Here's Miles Straw on approaching this like a normal spring training.
I'm just coming out here looking to have some fun and, just competing with these other guys. No job is given here. And, I'm looking to have fun with this and really competing for a job out there.
Right, one more from Miles Straw. He realizes just how urgent the situation is for him right now.
I'm definitely going to need to hit this year. So, you know, just working with SNIT and AC a lot. And, you know, I think just getting on base is going to be my biggest thing. You know, grind out at bats, have good at bats. And, I know as for a player myself, I know guys are going to attack me as much as they can just because of, you know, the other guys we have in the lineup. So just being ready to hit and staying aggressive and, you know, coming back to it and just, you know, getting on base for those guys is going to be the key thing for me this year.
What are we counting on from Miles Straw this year, Seth?
If he could improve marginally as a hitter, then that would be great, right? I don't know. I expect him to bat ninth. What am I? I expect him to maybe just to be more reliable in the outfield. You read that one writer the other day that said he was going to be an upgrade over George Springer in center field defensively, and I have no idea where he's getting that from, other than he just doesn't watch Astros games. He needs to get more comfortable out there, and I guess that would be the hopeful. If he can be the equivalent of a Mariznick in center field and give the same offensive contributions, but be able to be out there and be somebody that's just rock solid as a center fielder, and you've got to have a weak spot in the lineup somewhere, because otherwise it's a damn good lineup potentially.
Yeah.
Then so be it. Look, I'm not. We're a little bit spoiled here because we've seen some historic lineups by the Astros.
Yes.
He'll be the weakest part of your lineup unless he improves as a batter, but that's all right as long as everybody else is producing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate even being like, he's a good kid and everything. He's got to bat better.
Well, he is kind of being gifted this spot just through attrition. Like, they didn't make any moves at that position. This would normally be, if they hadn't traded Mariznick a couple of years ago, this would probably be something where Mariznick now takes over as the regular center fielder, probably in a similar spot in the lineup as Straw is going to take over, except with a little more pop in his bat than Miles Straw has.
I got excited about Kyle Tucker reportedly being beefier. Like, he's been hitting
the
weights.
You are excited
about
that, yeah.
I wonder if, you know, we were talking the other day about, there's nothing unorthodox about who you put at leadoff anymore because the rules have all been broken.
Yeah.
And I think most people, the chalk right now would be that Altuve goes to leadoff. What if Kyle Tucker takes George Springer's role as a guy that can step up and strike fear in the hearts of pitchers with some power
at
the leadoff?
He's actually, if Springer is what you've become accustomed to as the blueprint for your leadoff hitter, Kyle Tucker is the closest doppelganger for George Springer. I mean, I know he's a lefty,
especially
not a righty. He's
swole now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he can hit for power. Even when he had sort of that frail high school body look, he was still a guy who could hit with a little bit of pop. He's also very underrated speed-wise as well. He can steal a base for you at the top of the line. Seth, I think it actually makes a lot of sense. Assuming that he's gotten better with his, you know, assuming that some of the things that we saw during the shortened season last year, where he got more selective at the plate, if those are things that have taken hold and that he can extrapolate out over 162 games, I think that's actually a really good idea by you. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I think he's got the right amount of don't give a damn also.
Yeah.
I think there's part of it there. Sometimes it can work against you. Remember Hinch had to have a talk with him about kind of fitting the mold of everybody else and having the same sense of urgency. I feel like he figured that part of it out. So now it's balanced well with maybe being laid back about it, but with enough of an edge that maybe he's the right guy. That the pressure, like Springer, the move originally with Springer was just to try to just shake some life into him.
Yeah.
And it worked, and it worked incredibly well. With Tucker, I would worry a little bit that maybe it'd be too much pressure on Tucker.
Like, it's a super defined role for him.
And he's filling
big shoes as well, right? I mean, those are big shoes to fill with Springer.
But there's only one way to find out, Dusty Baker.
That's right.
That's to do the least old school thing you could do. Hey, Dusty, everybody's saying you're old because you're old. Everybody's saying you're washed up. You're not washed up.
That's right.
Why don't you do what the young kids are doing these days and put a slugger up at leadoff?
There you go. There you go. That's a good pep talk right there. Hey, Dusty, if you're of mind to be generous, how about texting Kids Meals to 20357? Step up and feed some kids, Dusty. Text Kids Meals to 20357. We're helping out Kids Meals Houston feed kids who are in extreme poverty. You guys are doing a great job. Got to keep it going. KidsMealsInc.org, Kids Meals. You can text to 20357. How many NFL players will need their feelings smoothed over once the Deshaun Watson trade tsunami plays out? That's next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Good to be with you. So Teddy Bridgewater is the latest NFL player to passive aggressively communicate his disgust with his employer by scrubbing his social media of any mention of them. Teddy Bridgewater unfollowed the Panthers on Instagram. Whew. And then Seth took it next level. Set his account to private. Not only am I going to unfollow you, you can't even look at my account anymore.
Wait a second, but how do we know? So did he publicly do the unfollowing and then he set it to private
I
after
guess.
That?
Yeah, I guess.
Or somebody that's still one of the lucky few that I guess he follows or what have you? Related.
Yeah, I don't know the mechanics of how we arrived at this, but I'll read the paragraph. The latest indication that Bridgewater's time with the Panthers is nearing an end comes from Instagram, where Bridgewater has unfollowed the team's official account, and he's also set his account to private. So that's where we are right now.
And oh, no.
I think it's safe safe to connect the dots that Teddy Bridgewater is not all that happy that his team's owner, Dave Tepper, is making no secret about the fact that he would love to have Deshaun Watson. He's thirsty for Deshaun Watson as the quarterback of his football team.
Isn't it weird? It feels like Teddy Bridgewater all of a sudden is this wizened old man that's been around forever. And how much? Let's see.
2014.
Okay. All right. I wanted to guess how old he was.
Oh, sorry. I don't know how old he is. He came into the league in 2014.
Gosh, is he almost 30 already then?
Gotta be, right?
That's crazy. I still think of him as a 24-year-old that's just, hey, he had a tough injury, and right. It's just a matter of time before he breaks loose and breaks free.
That's right.
But no, it's been a while now.
Yeah.
It's been some time since Teddy Bridgewater. He's still only 28. He'll turn 29 on November 10th of this season. But it does feel that way, right? That Teddy Bridgewater, unfortunately, I guess for him, is never, because of that injury, I don't think he's ever had a chance to really and truly develop into maybe what he could be. But we've also seen along the way that, all right, he's a little bit limited in terms of what is his arsenal. His ability and willingness to throw downfield is not very much at all. He's not all that athletic. He's got limitations that for him to actually really develop into something nice, he's going to need a sustained time in the same offense with the same coach. And he probably thought, hey, maybe this was going to be the spot. And that if he had some time with Joe Brady over the course of a couple of years, he could really get something done. But it just didn't work that way out. Over the second half of the season, after what was a really promising start, he took some serious steps backwards and did not look like a very good quarterback.
We'll get to what this means about Deshaun Watson here in just a second. But just as you lay that out, Seth, this is the first time in Teddy Bridgewater's career that he's been a losing quarterback. Like, people forget, like, he wasn't a great quarterback statistically in Minnesota, but they did go to the playoffs with him in 2015 as their quarterback. He was 11-5 as a starting quarterback for a Minnesota team that's probably built more around defense in the run game than it was around Teddy Bridgewater. But he went to the playoffs, then he suffered the injury, and then with the Saints last year, he was a backup. He went 5-0 as a backup quarterback when Drew Brees got hurt last year. And he was obviously very successful at Louisville. In college, he's always been a winning quarterback. This is the first time he's been a losing quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's decent. I guess my question is, Seth, how good a player do you need to be allowed to get up in your feelings on social media and unfollow the team as a statement? Like,
this is where one of our callers earlier asked, hey, is this going to be the start of a trend with Deshaun Watson where athletes all of a sudden want more say? And I think that it's not going to be a trend because it's only players of a certain caliber that can do this or have the leverage to do this. And maybe that there is a little bit of a trend because more star athletes seemingly have been doing it these last few years than before. But Teddy Bridgewater is not part of that trend. Teddy Bridgewater is not the guy that honestly should be getting emo about anything. If he gets traded, then maybe he goes off somewhere. He's probably sick of it. It's not his fault that he had a grotesque and gruesome knee injury, but that's the life he's in right now. And he signed a 3-year deal with the Panthers. It wasn't like they made him their franchise quarterback or anything. No, he should not be getting emotional and having hurt feelings over any of this. If he thinks there's anybody in America outside of his nuclear family that thinks that he's better than Deshaun Watson, then he needs to borrow money from those people.
Yeah,
or do something, because those people are delusional.
Your check's cashed all year long. Settle down, Teddy Bridgewater, with scrubbing from social media. You're not that level of play. And I'm guessing Dave Tepper, you know, the big hedge fund billionaire, I'm picturing the assistant walking into his office saying, "Hey, did you see what Teddy did? He scrubbed all the Panther stuff off the social media, off of his social media." Tepper's probably like, "Okay, good. He saved us from having to do it." Like, Tepper's probably like, "And I mean, like, he's Teddy Bridgewater. Get out of here with that."
Yeah. So, I hate even speaking that way about Teddy Bridgewater, but then he had to go and do it. And like, I wasn't a fan of when Deshaun did it. I don't like the passive aggressive stuff. I guess that's the way to send a message. But at the very least, when Deshaun sends a message, people are listening. Where nobody in Carolina right now thinks, "Oh my gosh, oh no, Teddy Bridgewater is upset. We're screwed if Teddy Bridgewater is upset." It's just a completely different reaction than what you get with Deshaun Watson.
So how many players will there be that are going to react like Teddy Bridgewater, or are going to need to be sat down in a room in the facility once their team doesn't get Deshaun Watson, where they're going to have to sit down with these guys and go, "Hey, I know you saw your name out there and everything, but you know, don't, you're our guy." Like, those are just rumors. Like, how many different guys are going to get swept up in the Deshaun Watson trade rumor tsunami? Teddy Bridgewater clearly has been swept up in it.
Well, yeah, and I guess the question is, all right, how many guys need to have it explained to them versus how many guys look at it as a challenge and say, "All right, hey, look, whatever, I'll take on all comers," or "If it doesn't work out, then I'm just going to prove to you whatever,"
right?
Versus how many guys get super sensitive about it. I'll say sensitive about it. It's understandable that you would get sensitive about it.
Right.
But the thing about quarterbacks is that they're supposed to be mentally tougher than the rest of us, right? They're supposed to be the best of us.
Yeah.
So Tua, when asked about it, I think said all the right things. Tua Tagovailoa is in a tough spot because he was clearly – I felt bad for Tua because I felt like he understood that he's not nearly as good as Ryan Fitzpatrick this year, and that he probably felt kind of awkward about the fact that Ryan Fitzpatrick got benched for no reason other than that Tua Tagovailoa was the first-round draft pick. So when he was asked about potentially being traded or not being the starter, I feel like he kind of did said all the appropriate things and all the right things. He might actually enjoy the opportunity to go off and get a fresh start. It's a weird thing to say when he's been with his team for less than a year.
He might, but if Deshaun doesn't go to Miami, he's the starting quarterback that's been involved in trade rumors. I do feel like Tua, having played for Nick Saban, is probably a pretty mentally tough dude. Like, I feel like Tua will go with the flow. Having played for Nick Saban, and his strong faith in the Lord will guide Tua to being able to get through any of the unwantedness that comes from trade rumors, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know about, yeah, sure, fear of the Lord and all that, but also his father was strict, old school.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Growing up, yeah. So, yeah, I think that Tua is one of these kids that he can, what's the Chinese saying? He can taste bitter. Mm. He knows what it's like he knows what true misery is,
right?
And he can handle some of the rough stuff. He'll be all right. And also, like, Tua Tagovailoa, realistically, if I were his dad and I were talking to him, I'd say, "Look, hey man, look, Deshaun Watson is Deshaun Watson. You're not there yet, and you know that, and you're trying to get to that spot. So maybe there's a close call this year, but you get another opportunity to go out and become Deshaun Watson. And in a few years from now, maybe the discussions are different."
Drew Lock. Is Drew Lock a player
who's... I'd ask him for a raise. I'd be the father that asked. Or I'd ask my son for a loan. I'd say, like, "Hey,
right
son,
after.
Don't worry, I'll pay you back. I mean, if you're going to make me pay you back. Remember all the things I did for you?"
That's right.
Up?
That's right.
Yeah.
Is Drew Lock a quarterback who's got the potential to get emo in this situation? Because Drew Lock has been mentioned in trade rumors because Deshaun, the betting favorite right now, is that he winds up a Denver Bronco next year, which would mean, in all likelihood, certainly mean Drew Lock's going to be replaced. And in all likelihood, Drew Lock comes back to the Texans in that deal.
Drew Lock strikes me as like one of these guys that's walks through life a little bit unaware of his circumstances.
Yep.
And maybe for the better most times. So I think he might I don't think he'd necessarily get emotional about it. Now, he might get haphazard and erratic about it and make a poor decision at some point if his actions off the field are anything like his actions on the field. So maybe he spouts off or something in social media, but he's not even really aware of what he's doing or why he should be upset. So I don't think he's going to get overly worried about it. Tua Tagovailoa seems very conscientious all the time. Like, he's the kind of kid that's always trying to do the right thing all the time, to the point where it feels oppressive. I don't know if Drew Lock, and I'm basing this, I don't have as much time spent watching Drew. I don't know if Drew Lock is like aware of where he even is or what day of the week it is at any given time.
Just watch him strut and stroll along the sideline during a game. He looks like he doesn't have a care in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of jealous, actually.
Even when Tom Herman made fun of him for... Wait, who was it that Tom Herman made fun of?
Drew Lock.
Yeah, it was Drew Lock. Yeah,
in the bowl.
When Tom
game.
Herman made fun of him for the backpack celebration or whatever, I got the sense that Drew Lock was only like dutifully offended. Like, he got offended because that's the thing you're supposed to do, but I didn't feel like he was genuinely offended.
I feel like he pointed across the field and looked at some of his teammates and said, look what their coach is doing, that's pretty funny. And they're like, he's making fun of you. Really? Jimmy Garoppolo. Would Jimmy Garoppolo get emo over being mentioned in trade rumor? And by the way, Jimmy Garoppolo, it ain't just Deshaun Watson trade rumors. Like, he appears to be a guy who's going to be on the move this offseason.
Oh, Garoppolo's a tough one because he had to spend all those years as a backup. He had no interest in staying a backup in New England. Remember, the New England wanted to extend him, and he and his agent said, no, no way in hell. And plus, boy, he wasn't going to get the kind of contract
worked out
as a backup.
Good advice.
That he was going to do in San Francisco.
That's a good agent. So, I don't know who it is, but he's good.
New England was in a spot where they were going to have to franchise tag a backup quarterback if they wanted to keep him. And now everything hasn't worked out the same way. I don't know. Garoppolo might enjoy the opportunity to maybe try a different situation.
Yeah.
So I don't think he gets overly sensitive about it. He looks at it as another opportunity.
Not a quarterback, but does Quinnen Williams get emo over being mentioned in trade rumors from the Jets? Or are the Jets one of the few teams where you wouldn't mind getting mentioned in trade rumors to get moved to the Texans?
Quinnen Williams is a defensive tackle for the Jets. He was a first-round pick a couple of years ago.
Right.
He seems like a salt-of-the-earth type of kid.
Yeah.
He seems like he seems, from what I've read about him, I don't know him personally or anything, but he seems like one of these kids that just loves playing football, loves his mama, loves everything you're supposed to love, and does the right thing. I don't – whatever turmoil he would feel about it, I don't think he would act outwardly about it. So I don't think – I think Quinnen Williams is going to show up and do a day's work regardless of what the circumstances are.
I think he will too. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Aaron Reese of The Athletic had a piece, Seth, where he plucked some of the cap casualties, potential cap casualties, from that long-form piece they did on The Athletic where it listed all the potential cap casualties for all the different teams. And Aaron Reese did a little bit of shopping for the Texans and cobbled together a list of ones the Texans might be interested in, 10 of them. I don't want to go through all 10 of them here, but I think one of the things that if you're a Texan fan and you're intrigued by what they're going to do to try to kind of rebuild this defense this year, they don't have the resources to do a massive rebuild either in the draft or with salary cap equity. I think one of the places that we're going to be having to look, Seth, is – do these guys have a history with the New England Patriots? That would be logical, right? I mean, with Nick Caserio, Jack Easterby, a few of the names Aaron has in this piece here that could be potential defensive pieces for the Houston Texans. Justin Coleman, Malcolm Butler at cornerback, and then Malcolm Brown at defensive tackle.
The one that got me really excited was Malcolm Butler,
yes,
the cornerback. Not because he's all that great a cornerback, but because Nick Caserio and Jack Easterby were there when he got benched at the Super Bowl.
Oh.
So I want to know what the hell happened. I want to know what happened.
Right.
Remember, he's crying during the – remember, they were playing the national anthem, and they flashed to Malcolm Butler, and tears were streaming down his face. And I thought, well, wow, man, was his father a vet or something? Like, what's going on here? He's really feeling the national anthem here. And it was because he'd been benched. And nothing ever came out about that. People in New England were really upset. A lot of people felt like that was like the height of hubris by Bill Belichick, that he cared more about whatever his personal grudges were than he cared about the team himself. And a clear story never came out about what Malcolm Butler did to get benched in the Super Bowl. But he went on to Tennessee, played for Vrabel, and we don't know. So now I – if the Texans don't show any interest in Malcolm Butler, if he's released, is it because they're not that impressed with Malcolm Butler, the football player, or is it because there's a holdover grudge by Nick Caserio?
Was that
the why couldn't Jack Easterby get Malcolm Butler right? Isn't that right. his job with the Patriots?
That's right. Come on,
Jack
that's a good point. Was that the Super Bowl they lost to Nick Foles? Was that why that was such a big deal?
Yeah.
Nick Foles
yeah.
threw for a jillion yards and they didn't have one of their best corners on the field. That makes sense. That you had a moment earlier, Seth, where you're like, oh, my God, Teddy Bridgewater's been doing this thing for 7 years now. I had that same moment looking at this piece by Aaron, like, Malcolm Butler's 31 years old all of a sudden. Like, he was making that interception against Seattle as a rookie, and, like, yada, 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 now he's 31 years old. You know what I mean? Like, it's that. Where the hell did the time go with Malcolm Butler? He was an anonymous rookie making one of the biggest plays in Super Bowl history what feels like 3 weeks ago. He's 31 years old now.
And I know, and I say he's not, like, he's not the best corner in the world, but he's better than the guys the Texans have right now, like every non-Roby cornerback they have. So I'm not sitting here turning my nose up at Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
I'd love to have any viable cornerback right now. Fuller, if they could get Fuller from the Bears, I'd love him. Give me all the cornerbacks you got.
Yeah. This New England dynamic is going to be... It's going to irk me, I think. Well, we'll see.
If they start, okay. If they start
bringing in all these
it with former
Patriots, yeah, it's just.
And because you know what Landry's going to do then? Landry's going to find every soundbite of Jack Easterby speaking glowingly about one of these players.
Well, I'm here for that part. I'm here for that part. I'm talking about the dynamics of the locker room and the team and everything else. Now, to be clear, I do think this is the route to go in 2021 in putting the roster together is just finding some reclamation projects where you're not breaking the bank. Because as I've stated earlier, this is a year of cleanup for the Texans. This is Bill O'Brien left behind a nuclear disaster of a salary cap and a draft situation. 2021's theme is to clean that up, clean things up.
Yeah. You know, one of the guys you had mentioned, Malcolm Brown, I forgot that he was a Longhorn, too, a Longhorn. So Malcolm Brown's turned himself into a decent football player and had a good year with the Saints last year. They're saying he's a cap. He's not a free agent. These are all cap casualties.
These are potential cap casualties.
Yeah. And I think he's not necessarily that much of a pass rusher. So I wonder exactly – For Lovie Smith's defense, I want as many pass rushers as possible. I want guys to get up the field and harass quarterbacks. And Malcolm Brown isn't quite that guy, so I don't know if I want to spend huge money on him. But you do have to stop the run here and there, you know?
I would say this, that the cap casualties that come from teams like the Saints, the Eagles, more so the Saints because they're an actual good football team, they're probably going to be pretty good players because the Saints are desperate to get under the cap. So they're going to have to wind up cutting some guys who actually were probably productive players last year just to get under the cap number. So as you're following this stuff, as you're looking at potential cap casualties, if the Texans are in on some guys from the Saints, I'm saving you from having to go watch Game Pass on all these guys. Chances are they're probably better than your garden variety cap casualty because the Saints are just in a position where they're like $90 million over the cap, and they're going to have to cut some pretty good guys. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. Dusty Baker met with the media earlier today. He talked about something Seth just brought up earlier this hour, finding a new leadoff guy. We'll hear from the Astros manager next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.